It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation and welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. I appreciate each and every one of you for joining us, for listening. And we look at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom, searching for truth and clarity. We want to help you get your brain around these issues so that you can engage in this battle of ideas that is raging in our country today, so that you can engage with your neighbors and your family and your friends, because ideas really matter. I so appreciate you. You're each treasured, valued. Strive for excellence today. Live with intention and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this great team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. All are dedicated to what we're doing, and that is to search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And a happy Monday to you, producer Steve.
Hey, I thought we weren't going to say that word anymore. This is Tuesday one.
Okay, Tuesday 1-0. Okay, got it. Hope that you had a great weekend, producer Steve.
It was unique in some ways and you know, laid back, I guess.
Well, we've got work to do. It is so evident. And be sure and check out our website, Kim Munson. It's MONSON.com. And take a look at our most recent op-eds. Patty Kergan, researcher, did one that very important on this Initiative 25 LEAP. And initially, it sounds good. And in fact, on the endorsement page right now, there's some really fine folks that have their name on the endorsement page. And I'm concerned that perhaps they didn't read it and research it. And so we're reaching out to them to talk with them about that. But Patty has an excellent op-ed on that. And then I have one that we published yesterday, 10 Reasons to Decline to Sign Initiative 25 LEAP. And we're really delving into this so that you can understand what it is. And there's two different ways that there can be ballot questions on the ballot. One way is it can be referred by the state legislature. They can say, okay, we want to put this over here and have the people vote on it. The other is through the citizen initiative process, which is somewhat unique to Colorado. And that's where you have people out in front of your grocery store or your hardware store asking you to just get this on the ballot. And sometimes it's important to decline to sign, because if you can keep it off the ballot, first of all, it prevents these really bad questions being on the ballot, which once you get all the campaign consultants involved and the way they spin it on television and in the mailers, they don't tell you the whole story. So that's why we're recommending to try to keep this baby off the ballot, Steve.
Yeah, we sound rather draconian. Trying to, they'll look at us and say, well, what do you mean keep it off the ballot? What are you afraid of? Well, we have a list of concerns, and you just nailed it in terms of the way it can be warped and twisted and made to sound so good. And yet it's not good. It's really rather pathetic if you look at it, the big picture on this one.
Well, yeah, and we'll continue to talk about this, but check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And check out the op-eds that Patty and I are doing on this. And I think she's going to have one on kind of connecting some more of the dots for next week. So be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter, because that's where you get first look at all of the upcoming guests and the most recent op-eds and podcasts. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And we have been doing, it takes a lot of time. We've got a really small team that does a whole lot of work. And I apologize. We have gotten behind on our podcasts and our recaps and diligently working to get those caught up. We got a number of them posted this last weekend. And so thank you for your patience. And we're just trying to get a lot of work out there. So that's what's going on there. But you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And I really appreciate each and every one of you who are contributing to help support what we're doing, because it is so important, this big question out there, freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. And as we know, that ultimately socialism comes down to force. Socialism is not about free stuff. That is just the carrot to get you to vote for that. But once socialism is in place, it's really difficult to get back out of it. So it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, the latest silent thief, government-induced inflation, and we also have Bidenflation. And all of those things are some form of force, Producer Steve.
Well, the all-powerful meme, saw it several times over the weekend. Two pictures. The first one is a kind of a silhouette of young people standing in a meadow, all holding hands, and it says, "This is what young people think communism is." The picture below it was one individual standing in front of a firing squad and said, "This is what communism really is." And You have said it several times, is that socialism is just kind of the gateway to communism.
Mm-hmm. It is. And ultimately, it comes down to force. And freedom is 1776. We fought a revolution for freedom, and I'm concerned that we're in our 1776 moment now, but it's a battle of ideas, Steve, and that is why we do what we are doing, because ideas so matter. So a couple of things. We had retired Army Major General Joe Arbuckle on last week, and we talked about a number of actions to save America. And there was one thing afterwards he said, we should have talked about that. And that is to go to this website, committeetosupportanddefend.org. And Alan West was very involved with this, but now that he's running for governor in Texas, he has stepped back from that. But there you can sign a letter requesting and have that go to the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, requesting that he honor his oath to protect and defend the U.S. Constitution. So I have gone, I have signed that. And then also the flagofficersforamerica.com, that's flagofficersforamerica.com, that's General Arbuckle's group. And there's a citizens action plan on what we need to do to save America. So I would recommend that you go check both of those out. And then let's go ahead and go to our quote for the day, and then we're going to talk a little bit about election integrity. In the second, third, and fourth segment, Rob Nadelson is going to be joining us regarding his comments on some of these Supreme Court cases. So you won't want to miss that. So I thought for our wisdom, inspiration, quote for today, Thomas Jefferson, this was a letter to Thomas Ritchie in 1820. And he said, "The judiciary of the United States is the subtle core of sappers and miners, constantly working underground to undermine the foundations of our confederated fabric. They are construing our Constitution from a coordination of a general and special government to a general and supreme one alone." What do you think of that, Steve?
I'm kind of glad that you used this quote, because it goes hand in hand. And ironically, the way these things work out sometimes, Rob Nadelson is your guest for the next three segments, and you're going to be talking about many things that are orbiting around the Supreme Court. And I noticed in Fox News website that they're quoting Ben Shapiro as looking at recent things that have come out of the Supreme Court, most importantly, Obamacare decision. And he's going after Kavanaugh and Barrett, specifically saying they are markedly unambitious.
You wonder, after the big fight to get all these justices on the Supreme Court, I mean, it was such an effort. They need to step in and have courage and really stand up for the Constitution. So it'll be really interesting to talk with Rob Nadelson about that. One other thing, though, and I just, hats off. We have to say thank you to these Colorado State Representatives, and that is Representative Ron Hanks, Dave Williams, Patrick Neville, Shane Sandridge, who we had on just recently, and Kim Ransom, and she is my representative. And I'm just going to read the press release quickly here. It says, today, this was July 8th, Colorado State Representatives Hanks, Williams, Neville, Sandridge, and Ransom submitted a letter to Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold requesting a current and complete schedule of all software upgrades to the election systems in each county in the state of Colorado to include the Dominion 5.13 upgrade. The representatives requested information on upgrades already conducted and those yet to be conducted. So just a little bit of a backstory for all of you, and as we continue on, though, is the Dominion machines, Jenna Griswold has been going in, the Secretary of State, and going in and updating the Dominion machines in the different counties. And once that happens, very possibly the hardware history, again, this is my layman understanding of this, the hardware history goes away. And so we will lose that hardware history of the 2020 election. And so, and hats off to all of you out there, because we have talked about this, contacting your county clerk and requesting. And I think it's against federal law. I think that they are not supposed to update those for a couple of years. But anyway, they've been doing that. But you all have been out there talking to your county clerks. And the county clerks are getting a lot of pressure on this. And it's because of you, the people. So keep that up. Be talking to your county clerks about it. Anyway, it says, it goes on to say, the people deserve to know where Colorado stands regarding equipment upgrades and alterations, which would likely affect vital 2020 election information still on the machines, Representative Ron Hanks, Republican from Fremont County, said. Based on my two visits to Maricopa County to observe the Arizona audit and the enthusiastic response from the citizens of Colorado, that's you all, thank you, we need to start laying the groundwork for an audit of Colorado's elections by the people. It is no longer acceptable for government to audit itself, tell us how perfect everything is, then deny the public any opportunity to investigate. No private entity gets to audit itself, then proclaim itself the gold standard. The government does not allow citizens to audit their own taxes. Elections belong to the people, and transparency is vital to ensure an honest, responsive government and the consent of the governed. I tell you what, Steve, that makes my heart swell with hope.
I'm very pleased to see, you know, these people doing these things, you know, going down that list of names. Let's not forget that Griswold, I think she screwed up royal. She had every opportunity to welcome any type of, you know, look-see. And when it came back clean, she said, see, I told you so. But she didn't take it. She's consistently pursuing this path of dark, you know, maneuvering. And it's like, what are you really up to?
Well, yeah, if there's no there, then open it up and let everybody take a look at it. Now, there is the U.S. Election Integrity Plan. And I would highly recommend that you go to their website. It's useip.org, and you can sign the petition to void Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold's illegal election emergency rules. And I would highly recommend that you do that as well. So be sure and check that out. And Holly at Altitude did a blog recently and said, in a recent show of strength, Representative Ron Hanks issued this letter and a press release challenging Griswold's questionable and unethical attempt to update all Dominion voting machines in Colorado without notifying the public. And again, I'm going to give you those names. That is Ron Hanks, Dave Williams, Patrick Neville, Shane Sandridge, and Kim Ransom. They are all Republicans. But why isn't every elected representative, whether or not Democrat or Republican, calling for this? Because no matter what side of the aisle you're on, we must have free, fair, and honest elections. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, I have great advertising business sponsorship partners. And one of those is Hooters Restaurants. And they have five locations, Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And they have happy hour specials. Tomorrow night is the Major League Baseball game. If you're going to watch it, Hooters Restaurants would be a great place to do that. They're going to have other sporting events on there as well. But they have all kinds of happy hour specials. So be sure and check out my website. All their specials are there. We're going to go to break. When we get back, we'll be talking with Rob Nadelson about the many of the recent Supreme Court decisions. You won't want to miss it.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at Kim at KimMunson.com as well. And be sure and check out some of our most recent op-eds. We are really delving into this LEAP initiative. It's Colorado Initiative 25. And really recommending that you decline to sign the petition when what they said, just get it on the ballot. But the problem is once it's on the ballot, then all the consultants who are making money, both sides of the issue, they make money whether or not it wins or loses. They make money on that, and they like to have these things on the ballot so that then they can certainly be in that fight and. Again, they make a ton of money on that. So let's keep that baby off of the ballot. As we're waiting for Rob Nadelson, a couple of things I wanted to mention here. This is from the Denver Post. It says, after the 2020 surge, Colorado gun sales continue at a record pace in 2021. It says, Coloradans since last year have bought guns at such a rapid pace that gun store owners struggle to keep their shelves stocked. Bristol Cone Shooting Training and Retail Center in Lakewood generally carries several hundred guns at any time. But during the pandemic, the shop's stock sometimes dropped to as few as 10, co-owner Jacqueline Clark said. The store supply of guns has improved, but it's still limiting how much ammunition people can buy. There's been a massive increase in demand at every level, Clark said. More Coloradans than ever before bought guns last year, and data from the first 5 months of 2021 show the record pace of purchase continues. And, you know, I was talking with some friends about that this weekend, and it's rather remarkable to me that many of those that are in office now are working to control the firearm sales. Here in Colorado, we had this law that passed about safe storage, that your gun has to be in storage if you're not using it. And it's well, if the bad guy is at the door and you have to go get your firearm out of the storage, it seems like that puts you and your family in tremendous peril. And so you have to wonder, and this is the same people that are pushing that are also letting criminals out of our jails and our prisons. And I actually was recently talking to a police officer, and he said that car thefts are just off the charts here in Colorado. And just think about that. If your car is stolen, they take away your ability to go to work, to go visit friends. And many times when your car is stolen, it doesn't come back in the condition that it was when the thieves took it. And unfortunately, I guess in the judicial system now, it's very difficult to put these people into jail for that. And so we've got some real big challenges going on right now, Producer Steve. And I think hopefully we're going to be talking with Rob Nadelson here in just a moment. We'll continue on. Let's see. Senator Rand Paul has introduced a bill to bar the FARS mask mandate on planes. Rand Paul said he will reintroduce legislation that bars the public transportation mask mandates on airplanes that were implemented earlier this year by the federal government. When the Senate returns to a session, I will be introducing an immediate repeal of the mask mandate on planes. He says, enough. It's time to stop this farce and let people travel in peace. He wrote this last week on Twitter. On his second day in office, President Joe Biden signed this executive order requiring masks on all public transportation, including in airports and on airplanes. And his order directed several federal agencies to immediately take action to the extent appropriate and consistent with applicable law to require masks to be worn in compliance with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we will continue on with headlines. Stay tuned.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air. And so we engage in this battle of ideas by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. I am pleased to have on the line with me Rob Nadelson. He's a former constitutional law professor, a constitutional historian, and a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute here in Denver. His research has been cited by Supreme Court justices, as he is especially known for his studies of the Constitution's original meaning. He is the author of The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. And Rob Nadelson, welcome to the show.
It's great to be back with you, Kim. It really is.
The Supreme Court has been busy, and we wanted to talk about some of these recent Supreme Court decisions. And first of all, the Supreme Court isn't really a conservative court, is it?
No. And in fact, I think we need to talk about this in furtherance of your mission of independent thought. The media narrative is that it is a 6-3 conservative court, just as last year the media narrative was that it was a 5-4 conservative court. Last year, the court issued a bunch of liberal decisions, and the media had to scramble to come up with explanations as to why it did while preserving its narrative. And this time, we've seen exactly the same thing go on. If you look at sources like CNN, the New York Times, USA Today, They come up with all these far-fetched explanations as to why a court that is supposedly has a supermajority would have so many liberal decisions. And as I'll explain, in some way, the court is even more liberal than it appears when you count up conservative versus liberal victories. So the first thing that listeners need to remove from their mind is this stereotype about the court being 6-3 conservative. It's not.
Well, and so which decision should we start with? There's several that you said are very important. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, I think probably the most important one of the entire term is the Obamacare case.
Okay.
One of the things that that this court has carried forward from the activist liberal courts of the 20th century is that it generally refuses to enforce the limits that the Constitution imposes on the enumerated powers given to the federal government. The Constitution lists certain powers that the that are given to the federal government. Implicit in those lists are limits on how far the federal government can go. And for many years now, the court has been generally refusing to enforce those limits. This occurred in the Obamacare case. Obamacare is, under the standards that the court itself has previously announced, an unconstitutional law. And yet the court this time avoided declaring it unconstitutional by claiming that Texas and the other 17 states that were suing somehow didn't have standing to sue. They demonstrated very serious damage. They showed that the damage was from Obamacare. They were spending billions of dollars a year to comply with Obamacare. But the court still refused to hear their case. In a dissent, Justice Alito pointed out that the justices have gone out of their way in recent years to grant standing to liberal states pursuing liberal causes like climate change and compulsory insurance coverage of birth control and so forth. They've gone out of their way to accommodate the liberal states, but when 18 more conservative states showed concrete damage, the court wouldn't hear the case.
So who is the term voted for on these decisions? Does the Supreme Court vote, or what's the correct term
votes.
On it?
It votes. It votes.
Okay, so what was this?
There was two.
Who was the two that were against it?
Gorsuch and Alito. Thomas agreed with the majority. He said that he thought Obamacare was unconstitutional. He had dissented earlier, but he didn't go along with the dissent this time because he said that some of the precedents that the court had on standing were inconsistent. I'll be honest. I'm an admirer of Clarence Thomas, and I think his decisions are usually very clear and well thought out, even when I disagree with him. I didn't understand his point in this particular decision.
Well, you bring up a term there, Rob, and that is precedence. And I'm surprised that Thomas would use the word precedence instead of constitutional, because there's a big difference between the two. Yes.
Well, he's talking about the precedence in the area of standing. Standing is a doctrine that requires you to have certain interests before a court will hear your case. And it is a constitutionally required doctrine, but sometimes the exact scope of the doctrine is disputed, and you can have good faith differences about that. And it's very possible that Justice Thomas didn't think that the court's decisions on that issue were defined enough. But I can't really speak for him because I don't really understand his decision. It just sounded odd to me. The reason the Obamacare case is so important is because here for the third time, the court refuses to strike down a measure that by its own standard is unconstitutional. Any constitutional lawyer or Supreme Court practitioner is going to tell states of the future, don't bother challenging Obamacare. The current majority is obviously dedicated to it. And the reason it's so important is because that's going to have enormous and very serious implications for American health care and for the American way of life.
Where's Kavanaugh and Barrett on this? I mean, after the big fights to get them onto the Supreme Court, it's like they're missing in action.
That's an interesting observation, Kim, and I'd have to say it's substantially true. And I'll explain what's going on here. You've got this body of Supreme Court precedents adopted roughly in the years 1940 to 1990, a 50-year stretch when the court was exceptionally liberal and essentially rewrote the Constitution. This is where precedents like Roe versus Wade arose, and a substantial rewriting of the criminal law in a way that was more favorable to criminals, the refusal to enforce limits on Congress, the court's constant overturning of state measures that would traditionally have been viewed as constitutional. It was during this period this body of precedent was built up. 50 years ago, while this was going on, Republicans and conservatives and traditionalists said, this is ridiculous. The court shouldn't, I mean, even if this law were good, the court shouldn't be making law in this way. It should be following the Constitution. And so it was in the 70s that Republican politicians started running for president. They started running for Senate and saying, we will put originalist justices on the court, justices who honor the text of the Constitution. Well, we're now 50 years later. There's still only one firm originalist on the court, and that's Justice Thomas, and he's been there since 1991. And the majority of the court, and certainly including Barrett and Roberts and Kavanaugh, obviously like or at least are willing to accept the liberal precedents that rewrote the Constitution during the 20th century. And so even some of the so-called conservative decisions that were trumpeted as conservative victories in this past term rest upon the infrastructure or the foundation of liberal precedents that are divorced from the Constitution. And I can give you a few examples of that. But my point is that if you count up liberal and conservative victories, you see that this isn't a conservative court. But if you actually go into the weeds and you study maybe some of the conservative victories, you come away with the idea that this isn't just a centrist court on constitutional issues. This court actually leans slightly to the left.
Did Trump not have candidates that would be originalists, or how did we end up with this? Did he get bad advice? My understanding is that the Federalist Society had given him a list of different names to choose from. How yes. did this happen?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm by way of disclosure, I'm a longtime member of the Federalist Society. I've contributed several scholarly articles to their magazine, and so I'm naturally favorably disposed toward the Federalist Society. I don't know whether the people – I was not involved, however, in the selection of judicial candidates. I have no idea of knowing – no way of knowing if mistakes were made or if people that seemed to be one thing turned out to be another. I will say that I'm a little disappointed in Gorsuch. I think that Gorsuch, by and large, has proven to be a good justice, not quite as good as I would have liked to have seen, but I would rank him second to Thomas from the top. The other two, I actually wrote articles, and you can find them. If you go to independenceinstitute.org and look at, click on the Constitution tab and go through my articles, you'll see I actually predicted this was going to happen with Kavanaugh and Barrett. In the case of Kavanaugh, he's a guy who was born in the District of Columbia, spent his entire life in the District of Columbia, except for the period when he went to Yale Law School. He was very much a creature of the Beltway. I didn't really see him taking on the liberal activist precedents from the 20th century. And then Amy Coney Barrett, I was a little less firm about, but I did write an article saying that even with her approval, it was not going to be a conservative Supreme Court. I'm on record there, and you can read the dates. And I said this was going to happen when the liberal media were all talking about how this was going to be a judicial reactionary revolution or revolution to the right. Obviously, I had it right, and they had it wrong.
What about Alito?
Alito is an interesting case. Again, I'm very favorably disposed toward him. Last year, just about this time, he actually cited some of my research, giving me credit by name.
Nice.
In a very important case. So, and by the way, so has Roberts, and so did Justice Scalia, and so is Justice Thomas from time to time. But Justice Alito is an interesting study. It's clear that he is not really willing, despite his dissent in the Obamacare case, he's not really willing to draw the federal government in other words, to bring it back to its enumerated powers. He wrote an opinion in 2018 that basically conceded to the federal government complete regulation over the economy, which is not what the Constitution says. On the other hand, on other issues, he can be very perceptive, very, very biting. The opinion, for example, in which he quoted my work, that was part of a larger discussion of provisions in state constitutions, such as we had in Colorado, that prohibited aid to religious schools while secular schools could get aid. Well, Alito pointed out, and he agreed with the majority of the court on this, that that was a violation of the First Amendment. So he and his dissent in the Obamacare case was brilliant. It was actually I think it's going to be a classic, especially when he starts listing all the ways in which the court has bent over backwards to help liberal officials and liberal states get standing to promote speculative damage from things rectify speculative damage from things like climate change, while refusing to grant standing to 18 states that showed very, very clear damage from Obamacare. It was a great decision. So I would say he's right probably 80% of the time, but he is wrong maybe 20%.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Roberts. And I'm going to ask just a layperson's question. How was he chosen to be Chief Justice? How does that work?
I think it came out of, it's been a while. I think it was like 2005 or something he became Chief Justice. So it's been a while. He generally, recommendations are made by people in the Justice Department who do an analysis of the record. This was during the administration of George W. Bush. There was nothing in his record that I'm aware of that suggests he was going to take on the liberal precedents, the overruling of which has been supposedly the Republican campaign over the last 50 years. He also was a creature of the District of Columbia. He was, unlike Kavanaugh, he was not born and raised in the District of Columbia. He was from Buffalo, New York. But with the exception of his time at law school, all of his professional career had been in the district. And naturally, he imbibed the attitudes of the district. Look, when you read the media and the media say something like, well, Roberts is trying to avoid controversy, so he's proceeding cautiously. What he means is he's trying to avoid controversy with his liberal friends inside the Beltway. That's the controversy that counts, right? What you and I think about it, Kim, or what insurance agents and carpenters and lawyers working on Main Street think about it doesn't count. Okay, that controversy is acceptable. What's unacceptable is controversy that comes from inside the Beltway. And that is the product, I think, of, you know, selecting people from the inside the Beltway and selecting people, as we have to an unduly great extent, people who are born on the coasts and then spend their time in Washington, D.C., or and go to one of two law schools, Harvard or Yale. So part of any future Supreme Court appointments, I think, part of that has got to be a consideration of choosing justices like Clarence Thomas who are not wedded to the Beltway or East or West Coast mentalities.
Do you think it's true that they go to cocktail parties and they don't want to be ostracized in the cocktail parties, as they call it, the cocktail circuit there in Washington, D.C.? Do you think there's any truth to that?
I think there's a certain truth to that. I think it's an oversimplification. It's a way of saying that they're surrounded by big government people and by social liberals. I mean, those are the people. I mean, I think the District of Columbia voted 95% for Joe Biden over Donald Trump in the last election, right? So that's what surrounds you all the time. There's a kind of peer group pressure there. Now, some people can resist that. Justice Scalia liked to go to cocktail parties with his good friend Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and that didn't affect him in the least, because he was extremely intelligent, he was extremely centered, and so what the cocktail parties people, what they said to him didn't matter. He would just laugh it off. Clarence Thomas doesn't care because he doesn't go to cocktail parties. You know, he goes home and he's with his wife, and they have their own little circle. They don't pay attention to the Washington D.C. glitterati. But for the average person, telling you as someone who, you know, spent a little time in D.C., it can be very, very seductive. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, as you know, I'm an advocate of Convention of States, the idea of constitutional amendments. One of the constitutional amendments I think I would like to see ultimately is moving the Supreme Court out of Washington, D.C. entirely, maybe to some place like Salt Lake City. I think we get better decisions.
that is funny. I think that makes a lot of sense, and that is funny as well. Let's go to break, Rob Nadelson. When we come back, there's some other rulings that they made that are of, I think, real interest to our listeners. And go to the next one on this. Arizona ballot harvesting ban is legal, and that's the title here. This is and you're being published in the Epoch Times on a regular basis, and also the Epoch Times is doing something on the Constitution, and you're one of the panelists on that. Before we go to break, quickly tell us about that.
Oh yeah, this is on July 19th, which is a Monday. My understanding is it's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m., but I think that's still flexible. And it's going to be in New York City, but you can watch through an online mechanism. You have to get that information from the Epoch Times. They're going to be, I guess, I know Alan Dershowitz is going to be one of the speakers. I'm going to be one of the speakers. And then there are, I think, four others. And each one is going to talk about some aspect of the Constitution for about 25 minutes.
Fascinating. And people probably can go to the Epoch Times to get more information on that. Yes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, let's go to break. I'm talking with Rob Nadelson. He is an expert on our Constitution, and we're talking about the Supreme Court. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool, this family-owned business in Sedalia, Colorado, is just a great little small business. Hal and Linnea Van Herke are the owners, and they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. And so whether or not you're a collector or a chef or a sportsman, was the other thing I wanted to say. Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. In fact, I got this really cool Swiss Army knife as a gift for someone just recently. So be sure and check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. When we get back, we'll continue talking with Rob Nadelson.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to all of you who contribute to keep our independent voice on the air as we look at these issues, searching for truth and clarity through this lens of freedom versus force. Force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. On the line with me is Rob Nadelson, and he's a former constitutional law professor, constitutional historian, and senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence at the Independence Institute here in Denver. And his research has been cited by Supreme Court justices, and he's especially known for his studies of the Constitution's original meaning. He's the author of the original Constitution, what it actually said and meant. Rob Nadelson, election integrity is big conversation out there. And I had an interesting conversation with a millennial this last weekend who's Typically, I'm not sure. I think pays attention, but, you know, doesn't think about this stuff all the time like I do. And she said, you know what? I think that there probably was some election fraud. But then the next thing she said, but I'm not sure it would have been enough to change the election. And I thought, you know what? There is this narrative, this concern about election fraud is obviously gaining gaining steam on it, because instead of there's nothing to see here now, we're now hearing the narrative out there that, well, yeah, there probably was something, but it probably didn't couldn't have changed the election. I thought that was very kind of a defining moment. Rob, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think your millennial friend is right. I think there was fraud. I think there were even wider irregularities. I'm not certain it changed the result of the election. However, there was one irregularity that nobody talks about, which certainly changed the result in one state, in Pennsylvania. The Constitution has a provision called the Same Day Clause. And part of the Same Day Clause says that Congress can designate a single time when we all go to the polls to choose presidential electors, and Congress chose November 3rd. The idea is you want to have the election all at one time, because the longer you spread it out, the more the risks are of fraud or of people voting in multiple locations, of changes in the way ballots are handled and so forth. Well, if you think about it, in probably the majority of states, we did not hold the election on November 3rd as required by federal law and as authorized by the Constitution. Instead, we held it on over a period of weeks. And when you look at, in Pennsylvania, for example, how these mail-in ballots came in and how people who actually went to the polls on November 3rd voted, you come to the almost inescapable conclusion that that irregularity, which again is indisputable but nobody talks about, costs President Trump Pennsylvania. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, is uncovered in the Arizona audit, and it would be interesting to see if other states follow suit. You know, one of the aspects of the Constitution that not too many people realize, including state legislators, is that the Constitution gives certain responsibilities directly to state legislatures. When state legislatures write election integrity laws for Congress or for the election of presidential electors, they don't act under their state constitutions. They act directly under the U.S. Constitution. And so when Arizona makes the decision to, at least as to federal elections, not to allow ballot harvesting, it's acting directly under a mandate from the U.S. Constitution. Its powers, therefore, have to be understood in that context.
So they recently made a decision on this Arizona ballot harvesting ban. They said that it's legal. That seems very important. Now, we can have ballot harvesting of up to 10 ballots here in Colorado. Of course, I think that could be abused. But I really do think that ballot harvesting is a way for – it may not be illegal. It may be that a person really did vote, but – that person that voted may not really understand the issues and may have been influenced by the ballot harvester. And I'm thinking specifically like maybe an apartment building or a nursing or assisted living facility.
Yeah, there's also the risk that the ballot harvester will not deliver the ballots that he has
right.
given. So, for example, a Democratic harvester could go to a Republican household or vice versa and collect the ballots and then just never deliver them. I'll tell you the truth. I don't like mail-in ballots, period. And I wouldn't advocate
Agreed.
Using them in any circumstances other than extreme necessity. There are a number of reasons I have for saying that. Number one, I personally think going to the polls is a great civic exercise. I think it is instructional in itself. It reconnects you with the community, with the people around you who live near you, who are also voting. And it also requires a certain amount of effort. And I think that is good. I think voting should require a certain amount of effort. Another reason I don't like mail-in ballots is I think it is open season by abusive husbands on abused women. That is to say, the husband says, you will vote the way I want, and that's it. Anyone, whoever is most powerful in that household, usually an abusive husband, can wind up voting for that household. The whole point of going into a voting booth is to protect the vulnerable from that sort of abuse, because nobody really knows what you've done once you go into the voting booth. So I think this whole experiment with mail-ins is a mistake. But in the case of the presidential election, and the presidential election only, it also is illegal and unconstitutional.
Well, and you mentioned Election Day. When we went to bed on Election Day, Donald Trump had won that election.
Yeah.
Right? And
right.
So this extending this out and finding ballots and of course, what's happening here in Colorado with Secretary of State Jenna Griswold basically saying that we can have no third party take a look at these elections, and five Republican representatives here in Colorado have demanded that the Dominion machines not be updated, and also are asking for a record of those that already have been. And if there's no there here in Colorado, I don't see what she has to hide. I think a third set of eyes is an important thing.
Griswold is highly partisan. Everybody acknowledges that. And partisanship really has no role in the Secretary of State's office. But to come back to this voting decision for a minute, this is a decision by which the Supreme Court ruled that 6-3, that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was not violated by Arizona's restrictions on ballot harvesting. You have to understand that this is not a constitutional decision. This is an interpretation of the law. And as such, it can be reversed by Congress at any time. So if members of Congress are complaining about this decision, they can simply introduce bills to reverse it. There's a larger lesson here, Kim, about the Supreme Court term that I haven't mentioned yet. If you merely count up the so-called conservative victories or the liberal victories, and you find them about even, that doesn't tell you everything, because if you look at some of the conservative victories, so-called, you'll find that they're readily reversible, and this is one of them. The voting rights victory, I think, is fair to characterize it as a conservative victory. I personally think it's an election integrity victory, but it can be characterized as a conservative victory. However, it can be reversed anytime by a majority of Congress and the president. And there were other so-called conservative victories as well, which had that same quality. For example, there was a case called Fulton versus Philadelphia. It held, and the court was unanimous in this, it held that the city of Philadelphia violated the religion rights of Catholic Charities by barring Catholic Charities from participating in placing foster children. Philadelphia barred Catholic Charities from placing foster children because Catholic Charities would only place in traditional married households. It wouldn't place in transgender or same-sex households. Well, the Supreme Court said that violated the free exercise of religion by Catholic Charities, and that looks good. But when you scratch into the decision, you find out that the basis for the court's decision was one little part of Philadelphia's papers, one part of their forms dealing with this area, in which Philadelphia said, you know, we can waive this restriction. We can, if we want to, allow you to participate in the foster child program, even if you don't want a place in transgender and homosexual homes. Philadelphia had never waived that restriction. They'd never used this provision at all. But it was that provision that caused the court to say that Philadelphia had treated or violated the rights of Catholic Charities unconstitutionally. All Philadelphia has to do, and this was pointed out by Justice Gorsuch, All Philadelphia has to do is remove that little clause from its paperwork, which it never uses anyway, and it can go on discriminating against people based upon their religion. So this is a good example of how some of these trumpeted conservative victories had a very, very tenuous quality, where the liberal victory in the Obamacare case looks permanent.
Wow. Hey, Rob Nadelson, this has gone very quickly. We have about a minute left. What is the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, the final thought I have is that it clearly is not going to work to try to change the Supreme Court to simply elect good presidents or good senators. I think we need to change the playing ground here. I mean, for conservatives to play ball in Washington, D.C. is playing on a field that is tilted heavily against us. You know, the other side gets the ball on our 20 and they got 10 downs and they run downhill. And we have to run uphill and we get only two downs and we start on our own five. We have to take this battle into the states. As I mentioned a minute ago, state legislatures have very important powers given to them by the Constitution, including regulating congressional and presidential elections. And state legislatures really can control the constitutional amendment process also. And so we need to energize our state legislatures. In the case of Colorado, we need to change our state legislature,
right,
and carry on the battle from there.
Okay. Rob Nadelson, thank you so much. I'm excited about this panel that you're going to be on as well. I so appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's great being with you.
Okay. Our quote for today is Thomas Jefferson in a letter to Abigail Adams in 1804. He said, "The opinion which gives to the judges the right to decide what laws are constitutional and what not, not only for themselves in their own sphere of action, but for the legislature and executive also in their spheres, would make the judiciary a despotic branch." My friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, AM 560 and 100.7 FM.